Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the AfriCast. My name is Brendan Lotz, and joining me today is Robin Chetty.
Hey, how's it going?
And Clinton Matos.
Hello, everybody.
How you guys doing this week? Nice warm week.
Yeah, thank God. It's been so cold for so long.
It's almost weird. Yeah, it's almost weird wearing shorts.
Well, I've been wearing shorts anyway. I just have to deal with the cold. I like Clinton. Shorts. They're comfy and easy to wear. Yes, Brendan.
you wrote about some new Lego stuff this week.
Yes, so...
All right.
Yes, Lego has this program called Lego Ideas. And basically how it works is you come up with the idea for a set, you put it on their website, and then people vote on it. If it gets 10,000 votes, Lego will take official notice of it, and they'll put it through a process of turning it into a real set. It goes through several rounds of, I don't know what else to call it, except like verification, qualification. Basically, it's several rounds of Lego looking at it and going, And they try and determine if it can be turned into a real set, all the logistics, and if it uses an external a license, they need to obviously get that license as well. And they just released the results from the latest round of qualifications, and it was the biggest round yet. 35 ideas have come through. To give you an idea, they usually only do like a dozen. So this is more than doubled. I mean, it's almost three times as much as they usually do. And there are a lot of interesting external licenses here. Discworld, there's a giant, an actual Discworld, you know, the space turtle, the four elephants, and the Discworld. That's my favorite of the bunch. But there's also an obstacle course from Fall Guys. There's the library table from Community. There's a set from Avatar The Last Airbender, which is Appa, however you pronounce that. There's the kitchen from Ratatouille. I'm just trying to see if there's something from Naruto. There's so many external licenses, and there's also one or two new things. Like somebody just bought this cool pirate ship. Somebody made just some stylized dogs. So there's a lot of cool ones. Oh, and there's also Starry Night, the famous painting. So there's a lot of cool stuff here. I really want the Discworld turtle to be made because I just like the build. But there's also one based on HeroQuest, which is the old Games Workshop game. And I maybe only like HeroQuest because of this one video, which I'll link to. And I'll link to all the creations, but everyone should check them out. And we'll have to just wait. They say early 2021, we'll find out which of these are going to be made. It might be Fall Guys just because that game's so popular, but I don't know if it will still be popular in early 2021.
Yeah.
So these ideas are all... the community, I guess, user created.
Yes, all fan created.
Do you know if they get any kind of, like, I guess, compensation?
Yes, so you get 10 copies of the set, which, you know, for you to keep, for you to give to your friends and family, whatever, and then you get 1% of the sales. But I'm not sure if it's gross sales or if it's, like, after expenses. I know you get 1% of something. People in the past who have won it said, you know, I'm not like, I didn't retire, but like I bought a new car and I finished paying off my house. So you make a lot of money. And also, I suppose if your set is bigger and more expensive, then you'll obviously make more money. The original Lego Idea sets used to be quite small. It used to be like 300 pieces maximum. And in the past 5 years, they've been like 1,000 pieces, 2,000 pieces, 3,000 pieces. So I assume either, you know, by on purpose or happenstance, or I think it's just because people want to make bigger things, they're obviously going to make more money on these bigger ones. And the last one I want to mention is that before, if someone makes something crazy and it gets approved, Lego still has to completely redesign it to make it, you know, so kids can build it so that it's not in danger of falling apart. So yeah, that's why Lego takes so long, because they have to sit there and build lots of prototypes and see how it works. So yeah, check that out. The last one they announced was a quote-unquote playable piano, but it doesn't actually create any sound. I'll link to that too. But it's really cool, and I hope we see the Discworld.
Cool. Robin, you watched Huawei announce some new stuff yesterday, but not a phone, curiously.
Yeah, so Huawei held the annual developer conference, kicked off yesterday, which is the 10th of September. And at the time of recording, it's still ongoing. But the kind of really interesting elements, or at least stuff that consumers will be interested in, happened yesterday. There were a number of announcements, like we mentioned. The first would be around the keynote, where Huawei's consumer business group CEO, Richard Yu, kind of unpacked what their thoughts are with regards to the Huawei ecosystem, their plans. And one interesting one was the Harmony OS.
Mm.
They're specifically working on the Harmony OS 2.0 beta, which is currently being rolled out to developers via SDK, specifically on smartwatches and smart TVs and in-car infotainment systems. So anyone that knows about Harmony OS, it was revealed last year at the same developer conference, and it was kind of billed as a IoT-focused operating system that Huawei was working on as it tried to kind of build out an entire ecosystem of devices. It would essentially work off of one centralized operating system, or rather communicate with one another via the operating system. So now we're getting Harmony OS 2.0. And the kind of big announcement here is that it's going to be shifting onto smartphones later in the year. Specifically, SDK is going to smartphones in December of this year. Thereafter, it'll go through some testing and potentially will be on devices, consumer devices, by October of 2021. So we could potentially be seeing Huawei's fully-fledged rival to Android and to iOS in the form of Harmony OS take shape next year. That said, all the kind of finer details aren't known right now, so we'll still have to kind of wait to see what Huawei has planned, because as we know, they are fighting on multiple fronts.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to the US and sanctions, as far as the company actually procuring hardware and actually being able to do its own business. So it's a really interesting time for Huawei, and it should be interesting to see how that plays out. As far as the other hardware that is revealed, there were six new pieces of kit that were showcased by the company. We highlighted three in particular. One was a new FreeBuds Pro wireless earphones. They're sporting this new dynamic noise cancellation, as Huawei likes to call it. And that's essentially now Huawei's rival to the Apple AirPods Pro and then to Samsung's Galaxy Buds Live earphones. So it looks like the earphone wars are hotting up, if people are interested in that kind of stuff.
Sorry, if you heard my blur, it's because I'm not a big fan of the Buds Live. The shape is just too weird. Anyway.
You don't like kidney beans?
I don't like... I like kidney beans. I love beans, but I don't like those beans.
Thinking about them beans.
So some of the other stuff we highlighted was a new Huawei MateBook X. This is, I guess, the notebook that sits just below the X Pro, which is the kind of their flagship offering. It's sporting 10th gen Intel Core processors. They're going to have i5 and i7 flavors. This is essentially, on the surface of it, looks like it's going to be Huawei's answer to the Apple 12-inch MacBooks. So this isn't going to be something that can compete directly with the MacBook Pro, but something that can perhaps be a Windows 10 alternative at the tier just below that. Mm. The last product that we actually highlighted was the... Sorry, let's pull it up, yeah?
The Huawei Watch.
Yes, the Huawei Watch GT2 Pro. So we've seen the GT2 and we've seen the GT2e land in South Africa, and now there's a Pro model. It's sporting some new materials, a few more premium materials in that regard. They're using a titanium body. They're using a ceramic for the underside of the watch. That's where all the sensors are housed.
Yeah.
They're also using sapphire glass for the watch face. So it looks to be a more premium offering. And again, with all these new pieces of kit that have been announced by Huawei, we don't have local details yet. But the vast majority are either launching in selected global markets later this month or in October. So we should have word from Huawei Mobile South Africa on that front pretty shortly. I'm assuming they just want to get all their pricing right before they reveal all the details.
I'm curious to see the watch, the new iteration of the watch. I mean, it's up against some strong competitors from Huawei itself, because the GT2 had 2 weeks of battery life when I reviewed it last year, and you had some pretty good battery life with the GT2e. So it'll be interesting to see how this one fits into that lineup.
Sure. I think, I guess, as you alluded to, the more interesting element for us right now is what's happening on the mobile side of things.
Yeah.
As we know, IFA was taken virtual, so some companies did and some did not choose to launch devices. Huawei has routinely launched the latest iteration of their current mobile processors at IFA. That wasn't the case this year. And there's no word as far as a new Mate series being announced. So, like we mentioned earlier, Huawei are facing some struggles as far as procuring hardware for their devices. The US are making it quite difficult. So I think that's probably the most interesting announcement, in the fact that there wasn't an announcement.
Yeah.
That Huawei's mobile business, which has been very strong, and they're still sitting in that kind of second position as far as smartphone shipments go, is that potentially in jeopardy? Again, a lot of questions that need to be asked as to how Huawei is going to see out the next 12 to 18 months.
Absolutely. Very interesting to see, especially now with the stricter restrictions placed on US firms. We saw Samsung and SK Hynix announce that they're not doing business with Huawei anymore this week. And yeah, bad times for Huawei. I think the ban in the US is starting to really hurt it, but I suppose it's one of those wait and see situations. Before we get into the meat of this podcast, I just want to chat about a documentary that was released this week on Netflix. Now, Netflix has a really good run of documentaries on its platform, like The Tiger King from earlier this year that everybody lost their minds over. Don't F with Cats was one that really sticks out in my mind. But where Netflix does really well is in its documentaries about current affairs. And the latest one, The Social Dilemma, looks at tech companies and how much power they have. And that's a really important subject to discuss. However, The Social Dilemma, for some reason, decided to put in these really terribly acted dramatizations or scripted parts into the movie or into the documentary. So you get this really, really hard-hitting sort of story from folks who have worked in the industry. So you meet guys like Asa Raskin and Justin Rosenstein, who separately helped create infinite scrolling and the like button. And they discuss how these inventions came about and what the purpose of them was. And there's some really hard-hitting revelations there that I think a lot of people don't know about, that I didn't know about, certainly. But then you have these moments where you meet this family who's having issues with social media, and it's just this massive disconnect between the content and then this dramatization. And it just ruins the entire experience. And it makes it incredibly difficult to watch because the stuff that's happening on screen with this family is just so bizarre and so extreme. You kind of sit there going, what? Is this something that happens in real life? It's just so, so weird. And then, like I say, you have these really hard-hitting facts and stories from people that have worked in the tech industry. And you have like little Ben there trying to get by a week without using his cell phone. What?
That sounds like those terrible Lifetime movies where the mom is always like, don't go on social media. And then the teenage girl is like, I'm going to go on social media. And then she gets kidnapped. It's the same movie that they've been making for the last like decade.
Well, so in this, for instance, media, right? Yeah. There's a point where the eldest or the only son, Ben, says that he'll stop using his phone for a week, right? And then there's no point in this dramatization where we see that he's like watching extremist content, right? So he leaves his phone for 21 hours and then he finally breaks and he gets onto all his social media and catches up with his friends. And then the very next scene, the guy is watching like extreme left content. And you're like, what? Well, not extreme left. They call it the extreme center. That's what they call it. Extreme center content. I don't know what that is. But apparently it's a thing in this universe. And it's just so bizarre. And I get what they're trying to do. But it's just, it's so, so bad. It's worse than B-movie That is B-grade movie bad. But, man.
Do you guys remember? Do you guys remember the Neutralists? I think they were called in Futurama. I have no strong feelings one way or the other. Tell my wife I said hello. That's exactly what it sounds like. The extreme center.
And then, there's one scene where the AI is represented by an actor, and the actor is auctioning off this user's attention in real time. And it's just like, I get what they're trying to portray. It's not very easy to showcase how an algorithm works. But there's a better way of doing it, which is tell people this is how the algorithm works. You don't need to show me an AI slamming buttons and say, well, we've sold 10 seconds of attention to some hair product. And you're like, what? No, man.
Okay. It sounds like those like little mini episodes you used to get on Nickelodeon back in the day.
Yeah.
Where they explain how the human body works or something like that.
Yeah.
I have to ask, does it do a better or worse job of representing the internet than Wreck-It Ralph 2 Break the Internet?
No, it does a worse job.
Oh, my God.
It's really bad, but so I wrote about this week, and I think that if you can make it through those scripted bits, even just fast forward through them, there's some really great information in this documentary. However, that having been said, I think that a documentary released last year called The Great Hack does a better job of relaying the message that The Social Dilemma is trying to relay, and it just looks better and is a better watch. But yeah, The Social Dilemma, if you got nothing to do this weekend... and I really mean nothing. Like, it might be better for you to just sit outside and enjoy the sun. Watch The Social Dilemma. But yeah, it's not very good from Netflix, which is disappointing given its long run of successful documentaries. Anyway, let's get to the news of the week. Perhaps the most important news of the week. The yes. Xbox Series X pricing has been unveiled.
Well, it wasn't just the pricing, it was the whole damn console.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I completely forgot about the Xbox Series S.
So let me give everyone a quick timeline. So September 7th, and a few days around September 7th, like the 6th and the 5th, there were a lot of rumors going around of a new console called the Series S. Now, very confusing. There are two consoles. There's the Series S and the Series X. I'll explain the difference a little later on. Anyway, there was... pictures and a lot of solid information going around about the Series S, a smaller Series X that was cheaper. I mean, people had pictures of this thing. They had
digital specs, only, had, all that sort of stuff.
They had all the details about this, but it was all rumors because none of it was official yet. And then Microsoft or the official Xbox account on Twitter was kind of like, okay, you know, the jig's up. And on the 8th, they just announced it. And they didn't just announce it. They announced it with a price. Now, the reason the price is so important... because this is the first time we got a price of a next-gen console.
Yeah.
And basically, Sony and Microsoft have been playing chicken with the price of their consoles because the rumor, the theory, is that whoever announced the price first would be at a disadvantage because then the other party could change their price to either undersell them at a cheaper price or price it exactly the same. So they are, you know, eye-to-eye competitors. But Microsoft kind of... you know, they folded and they said, okay, you know, the rumors are true. Here it is. It costs this much. And then we got the pricing for it, I think a few hours later. And then the next day we got pricing for the Series X. So do you want to take us through the pricing quick, Brendan?
Yes. Just give me a moment. Sorry, I don't have the pricing on me.
Do you want to reverse and I can do the pricing?
Yeah, you do the pricing. I'll go over the specs.
Okay, so how much are we going to be paying for these things? Now, I'm going to give you the US prices first. I'm going to tell you what they convert to and then how much we're actually paying. So let's start with the cheaper one because this one was a real surprise. The Xbox Series S is the cheaper of them. It costs overseas $299. At the time of writing my story, which I'll link to, $299 was just about 5,000 Rand, almost exactly 5,000 Rand, give or take a few Rand. The price in South Africa... 6999, which is 7,000 Rand. Now, before everyone says, oh, the 2,000 Rand's going up in smoke, I want to remind everyone, in America, when they give prices for things, that usually doesn't involve tax. Depending on your state, in America, when you see the price of something, when you get to the toll, you're not paying that price because they then add on the VAT. So the 2,000 Rand difference isn't that much if you consider 15% increase of our VAT, custom duties, import fees, and all of that. it's not that bad. And also, 7,000 Rand for a brand new next-gen console is crazy. I mean, an Xbox One or the Xbox One X, the more powerful one, you can't get those for 7,000 Rand. To have the news that we will be getting this thing in South Africa for that price was kind of crazy. And yeah. Then they announced...
I just want to highlight something very quickly. 6,999 Rand is how much it'll cost me to go and get an Xbox One S 1 terabyte console right now from Macro.
Yeah, it's crazy good prices. And I want to add this as well. $299, coincidentally, is the exact same price of the Nintendo... it's the exact same American price as the Nintendo Switch. The difference is that the Nintendo Switch in South Africa costs 8,000 Rand.
Yeah.
The Switch, which came out years ago, will be more expensive than the Xbox Series S. And I'm willing to bet that the Nintendo Switch will actually have another price change by the end of the year. Again, this is rumors. There might be another Switch console. There might be a price increase. I'm just saying, when this console comes out, it will be a brand new next-gen console that can do 4K and all that good stuff. Again, we'll discuss that in a bit. And it'll be cheaper than the Nintendo Switch, which is crazy. But let's get into something that's more expensive, which is the Series X. This is the, what did people call it? The trash bin. The big brother of the Series X.
The fridge.
Overseas, this cost $499 at the time of this news. That converts to 8,316 Rand. Unfortunately, the price difference is bigger. In South Africa, the console costs 11,999, which is just about 12,000 Rand. The price difference is almost 4,000 Rand, which is quite steep.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the specs, and I think Brendan will take us through the specs here between these two. I'm not really seeing the value, except if you get a lot of secondhand games. The big difference between the two is that the Series X has a disc drive and the S isn't. It's completely digital.
Yeah.
But do you want to take us through some specs, Brendan? We'll try to see where that price difference comes from.
Okay, so let's take a look first at... we're going to go over the main components. So I'm going to look at the RAM. Let's start with RAM. Video RAM. The Xbox Series X has 16 gigabytes of GDDR6. The Xbox Series S has 10 gigabytes of GDDR6. So here's where it becomes a bit confusing. It seems as if there are two different iterations for each of the consoles, a 10 gigabyte RAM version as well as a 6 gigabyte RAM version for the X, and then an 8 gigabyte version and a 2 gigabyte version for the Series S. There you might have to just take a look, be careful about what you buy. I think the obvious choice there is to go for the one with the higher RAM. You're going to get better performance. In terms of CPUs, both are running a Zen 2 CPU. AMD is going to coin it this holiday season, running at 3.8 gigahertz. I don't believe that is all core, though. I stand to be corrected. But the same chip is in the Xbox Series S as well. In terms of graphics, it's a custom AMD Radeon RDNA Navi 12 with 12 teraflops of computing power. There is a similar sort of card in the Series S, though it's a bit lower spec. It's a custom AMD Radeon RDNA with 4 teraflops of computing power. And I think this is where the main comparison comes in, is the video output. So the Xbox Series X does native 4K with 8K support, and it goes up to 120 hertz refresh rate. The Xbox Series S supports 1440p resolution. It does support 4K as well through playback or upscaling, and then you get the same 120 FPS. So I think here is where I just want to stop very quickly and break away here, because I think this is where a lot of people are, where your pricing is going to come in, or your buying decision will come into effect. Native 4K is great, absolutely fantastic for the Xbox Series X. My worry, though, is what quality that is running at. I don't think I personally haven't seen any video footage of the Xbox Series X running 4K, so I can't really speak to this. But I think that in terms of the Series S, 1440p, that's a really nice sweet spot, especially at 120 FPS. And I think that will be the thing that will get a lot of people buying the Series S in South Africa, and the price as well.
Well, I want to also talk about 4K quick because people kind of underestimate how small the 4K market is. Not a lot of people are getting 4K. I think 1080p is still the king when it comes to resolutions.
Well, on Steam it is, at least.
Yeah, on
it's
Steam
the
at
most
least.
Popular.
Think, you know, if you're the average Joe, some people are saying, I want to buy, you know, the next generation of consoles to experience 4K. Mm. And then you say, oh, that's cool. What TV do you have? And then they tell you their TV and it's not 4K. And yeah. I'm like, what are you doing? That's like putting jet fuel in your Hyundai. And so, I can say that because I have a Hyundai. And it's a very good car. But it's pointless.
I mean, I agree with you there. And I think that this is where the Xbox Series S is going to be really valuable. Because I'm just looking at myself now. I want to upgrade my PC. I'm looking at getting a new graphics card, which is going to cost me in the region of 10,000 Rand. Now, that's going to get me to 1440p at 120 hertz plus, depending on what I buy, of course, ultimately, when I decide to hand over my shekels. But what I want to talk about here is that the price of the Series S, which is your CPU, your GPU, all of that stuff, is contained in one thing, and it's 699. I can't find a graphics card that is as good a value for money. Brand new, obviously. Not talking about secondhand market. Brand new. And for me, as somebody that is already making use of things like Game Pass, I have a PC and then I get crossplay if I get Game Pass Ultimate. Well, not crossplay, but I'm able to play Xbox games on my PC. I'm starting to wonder whether I need to upgrade my computer. Obviously, I'm going to because I'm just that type of person. But the Xbox Series S is a really, really compelling buy, and you have to wonder what Sony is going to do here, because I know that they have the PS5 and a PS5 discless edition. Yeah. I wonder if they're going to go the same route that Xbox has gone here with that all-digital version.
So that's what I also wanted to talk about. When the PS5 was announced in earnest, I mean, they did some teasers and stuff like that, but when it was announced in earnest, they said there's going to be two, and both of them are going to be at launch. And as far as we know, the only difference between them is one has a disc reader, the other does not. The other is entirely digital. But the Xbox Series S and X are not. There is a big difference between them in terms of what they can do graphically and also in terms of the discs, well, having discs and not having discs. So we don't know if PlayStation is going to be like, there's the PlayStation 5, there's the PlayStation 5 Digital Edition, and then there's also the PlayStation 5S, which is a smaller one. I don't think they're going to do that, but we obviously don't know right now at the time of recording.
I think that Xbox has thrown a wolf among the ducks here with the launch of the Series S, or the announcement of it at least, not launch, because that's only coming on 10th November. But I think that they really have thrown a wolf among the geese here, or ducks. That's what I said previously. Because I don't think Sony is prepared for this. I don't think Sony has a budget console, in quotation marks, ready for the market. Maybe they do, though. Although, thinking back to everything that they've said, it seems pretty much that when they announced the PS5, showed it off, that was it. Thanks for coming. Xbox has been kind of teasing, oh, we got more coming later, we got some more announcements coming before release date. So, it's very interesting. Robin, I'm curious, because you are the main PlayStation player here on our team. Is the Xbox looking interesting to you at all, or are you just waiting for the next PlayStation?
So it's looking interesting. I would never buy the Xbox. I've owned one previously. It's not for me.
Okay.
But if I'm looking at the Series S and Series X, I understand what you guys are saying, just in terms of the Series S being potentially good, great value for money.
Yeah.
Particularly for those gamers that might have a whole bunch of different kind of systems in their kind of array.
Mm.
But for me, Sony traditionally has never worried about pricing. There's never been a real hurdle for it, if we're brutally honest.
I can't deny
much
you
like
there.
Apple.
Yeah.
Much like Apple, they don't have to worry about pricing because people will buy.
Well,
regardless. And well, sorry, I understand.
I want to cut you off, Robin.
Yeah.
I think that was true until this generation. if Sony wasn't worried about pricing, they would have told us the price at reveal.
I don't think the company is worried about pricing. I think they're more worried about actually having their supply chain in order. I think that's the bigger issue, is that they don't actually have enough devices to meet the requirements for launch. That I think is the major hurdle at this stage. Obviously, I stand to be corrected.
Yeah.
But again, when it comes to Sony products, they have been a lot more expensive than Xbox in the past. And that really hasn't been a hurdle for the company. I think what's more interesting is what Microsoft is doing around the kind of gaming ecosystem, the kind of different services and platforms they're adding to the mix to make their console seem more appealing. Yeah. I don't think Sony have done that. And that's potentially where they stand to lose business from me, but potentially from other PlayStation gamers. So from a hardware perspective, I don't see any thing that's going to sway people. For me, it's all about what Xbox are doing from a platform perspective. I think they want to turn their console into essentially your media hub for your home. And right now, it's looking quite good in that respect.
So I tend to agree with you there, Robert, in terms of like people who buy PlayStation are going to buy PlayStation. I mean, for me, the reason I got a PlayStation was because I wanted to play God of War. There was nowhere to play God of War other than a PlayStation. And like, we can deny it as much as we want, but PlayStation does have some of the best exclusive titles. Spider-Man sticks out from the last generation, The Last of Us, God of War, obviously. And I think that it, especially now, where it's becoming like, I just want to play games. I think that people are just going to buy a PlayStation regardless of what the price is. It's like you say, they like Apple in that regard. It's not a concern for them because they know that people are going to come to the console whether it's well priced or not, because games.
I think when we had that kind of the first next gen console wars, when it was PS4 versus Xbox One. I think the lines in the sand are pretty firmly drawn. You're not going to be finding people switching sides these days, in my opinion. Also, the fact that neither Sony or Microsoft have anything stand out from an exclusive launch title perspective also gives me pause.
PlayStation still has Miles Morales. That hasn't been delayed yet.
Yeah, well, that's a DLC, though. I think a lot of people were disappointed in the fact that it wasn't.
Okay.
Sorry. Well, I think, it's just that where the PS4 and Xbox One a few years ago, exclusive titles was a big selling point.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be one in this case. It's just that I think that strategies for these next-gen consoles have been a bit odd as far as how both companies have kind of approached things.
I tend to agree with you. I also just want to take a moment and talk about the real winner in this entire setup, because it's not Xbox, it's not PlayStation, it's actually AMD, because both consoles are running AMD tech, and AMD is set to release or announce new CPUs and new GPUs next month, October. So AMD is going into holiday season with two consoles and its own technology that it is probably going to release before December this year. Now,
is AMD publicly listed?
Yes,
that'd be worth getting some stock.
That and this is the thing, right? Is I know NVIDIA just announced its 30 series, but you have to know that AMD is going to come in there and go, oh, that's nice. You got a 3090 for whatever the price is. I think it's $1,000. That's really cool.
$1,400.
Yeah, $1,400. That's really cool. We've got a higher end card that you can get for $500 because they are going to do something like that.
If that happens, it will be apocalyptic. I don't think it will. I think they'll focus on the mid range.
Yeah.
Okay, so, it's speculation time. I think AMD is going to announce better 1080p cards. Yeah. I think they're going to offer 370 equivalent performance for less money, but I don't think they're going to be able to touch the high end.
And that's the thing, is that AMD traditionally hasn't really been a player in the high end. I mean, sure, you got your Radeon 7 and Vega 64, all those cards are supposed to be high-end cards, but when it comes down to brass tacks, NVIDIA has the high-end desktop enthusiast market. But if I'm NVIDIA or Intel, I'm looking at AMD going, damn, we messed up. Because, I mean, you're in both consoles. You've got new tech coming in holiday 2020. Lisa Su is rolling in it. Dr. Lisa Su, sorry, is rolling in it at the moment, I'm sure. I think that it's going to be an interesting holiday this year, especially with these two consoles. And I think that, I hate to say it, I don't want to pick sides, but I think that the Xbox Series S, from a pure value perspective, is something that is going to be hard for PlayStation to kind of lure people away from.
Can I paint you guys a picture?
Well, I mean, you can. We won't be able to see it because...
It's a picture of words.
A word picture. Okay, yeah, sure. Go for it.
Let's say, I'm going to give you two pictures, actually. Let's say you're somebody who games, you're a very casual gamer, right? You don't follow stuff we talk about, like we just follow, you know, buying AMD stocks.
Mm.
You just want the new console this holiday season, right? Mm-hmm. But also, you have to keep in mind, this fictional person, it hasn't been a great year because of COVID and everything. You maybe don't have as much spending money to throw around, or maybe you still have the same amount of money, but you're keeping a lot of it in the bank because no one knows what's going to happen, you know, tomorrow.
Yeah.
If you go to the store or you go online, the Xbox Series X right now is the cheapest console. It's even cheaper than the Nintendo Switch. And our casual gamer, you know, maybe doesn't even read that it doesn't have a disk drive, or maybe they read that and they're like, whatever, I already have an internet connection, I'll download stuff regardless.
Yeah.
I just don't see that casual market why they would buy the PlayStation when the Series S, right now, it looks like it might be close to half the price. And also on top of the casual market, I want to talk about, you know, it's the stereotype, but it's the moms, the dads, the grandparents who go into the store and they say, I don't know a damn thing.
Yeah.
Little Timmy wants a console for Christmas. I want to pick it up as cheap as possible. Again, they are going to go into that store and see this Series S. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it does, but the price on it is the smallest. I think Xbox is going to make a lot of sales that way.
Yeah.
Again, I might be underestimating brand, brand loyalty. Even the mother and the father might be like, little Timmy, he wants the PlayStation, I'll buy the cheapest PlayStation and they'll get the discless version or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think there's a large casual market and a large uninformed market and a large parent and godparent market who will be picking this up.
So the other thing I do want to just highlight, Clinton, sorry to interject here, is connectivity in South Africa is still a boon. I was just reading up last night what average internet speeds are. This was for something completely separate. But South Africa's average internet speed is 6.5 megabits per second, which is very, very low. Just for comparison's sake, Vietnam has an average speed of 9 megabits per second. So our internet speeds are very low. Add into that that data is quite expensive. The situation has gotten a lot better since April, thanks to the Competition Commission forcing the likes of MTN and Vodacom to reduce the prices of their data. But that's not to say that everybody's now spending oodles of money on data. It's just that it was slightly cheaper than it was before. Now, something about a digital console to me, like every time I hear digital in my mind, I go, oh, now I have to download X amount of gigs to play this game. Like, I know that it's not comparable, but if we take like something like Call of Duty Modern Warfare, which is, I think I saw 169 gigabytes at the moment.
It's more than 200.
Oh, over 200 gigabytes at the moment. Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of data for somebody to have to consume. Now, I'm not saying that all games are like that. However, I kind of am because that's where games are going. Like you're looking at 100 gigabytes per install of a game. And especially with PlayStation, I know from experience, PlayStation's download servers are appalling.
Yeah. Console downloads suck.
Hopefully that is something that's fixed, but it is something to keep in mind regarding how much data people are going to have to pay if they go or have to use if they're going to go the all digital version. And it's something sort of related to this is earlier this week I saw somebody on Twitter complaining that they had bought a new Huawei P40, and at no point during the sales process had somebody told them, this thing doesn't run Android. You're not going to be able to use your Google apps, et cetera, et cetera. And they only got they got home and realized this when they had the phone, unpacked all of that stuff, and they were already using it. Now, my concern is that folks that at retail that are selling these things don't relay this information to people. It's an only digital console. They go to another store after they bought the console, go and buy games, and then they can't use them. So I think that there's two things here that need to be highlighted, especially for South Africa, is that it needs to be made painfully apparent that the Series S is an all-digital console. People on the ground at retail need to know that it is an all-digital console and what that means for the consumer. And I hate to say it, but given South African retailers' propensity not inform their staff about what's happening, I worry that this is going to become a problem in South Africa.
So I want to add something to everything you said, Brendan. Mm-hmm. First of all, I 100% agree. Our internet infrastructure isn't great, but the problem is that even if you buy a physical game nowadays,
you have to download
a single game, a single player game. You probably have to get home and download an update that's the size of the whole download anyway. So that's a pricking point, first of all. But something that is good about if you spend extra on the physical console is that a lot of people share games in South Africa.
Yeah.
I know there's a few like Facebook or WhatsApp groups of people where like it's not a stock fall, but basically people have physical games and they basically trade it amongst themselves as like a circulation. So someone will get one game and then everyone will get the chance to play it, but only one purchase has been made. Or even just like in a household, you know, the privileged household with people with two consoles who don't want to share for whatever reason, you can swap the games. Or if you have a friend, you can just swap the games. Now, neither PlayStation or Microsoft off the top of my head have said that that's not going to be allowed this generation. I mean, I remember during the last generation, Microsoft was basically saying, you can't share games. We don't want you to do that. And then PlayStation made fun of them endlessly and people hated it. And then Microsoft was like, fine, on the Xbox One, you can share games.
Yeah.
But we're not going to be happy about it. That's a big thing people have to remember, that the physical games themselves have value in terms of sharing them. And also, trading in games at places like BT Games is still a big thing in South Africa. People like to buy physical games, you know, even at full price, even at the ridiculous 1,200 price that AAA games are now. They like to buy that game knowing in a few months when I go buy another game that costs that much, I can get, you know, however, I don't know how much you would get. Usually it was very little back when I did it in the PS3 days, but I can get X amount of rand towards my next game. This isn't an investment, but it is a product that is going to have some value in the future when I traded it.
So I'm curious. I want to pose this question to both of you. So Xbox seems to be going all in on this Game Pass thing. Rather just buy a subscription and play our games. You don't have to buy the console. I mean, Game Pass for PC is expanding. So there's a couple of really great things happening with Game Pass. So Robin, because you're a PlayStation player, I'm curious to find out what your thoughts. Do you look at Game Pass and think, oh, I wish there was something like this for PlayStation?
Yes and no. So
okay,
I think it is a very luring concept. For me, it kind of makes sense depending on the country you're in. We've kind of noted a few of the endpoints for consumers as far as connectivity and streaming goes and data. So from that perspective, I understand having a highly digital solution in place. It's just that I don't think it really democratizes gaming for a lot of South Africans. That said, I don't necessarily have to go into the back catalog and kind of see other games. I mean, if I take, for example, PlayStation Plus, only reason why I have that is purely to access a lot of the online aspects of games.
Yeah.
I don't really use it to play all the titles, things that don't really interest me. Again, I might not necessarily be the best case best example of a modern gamer.
The problem is that
there are very specific things I like to play.
Yeah.
The problem is that Xbox Game Pass isn't just old games. It's brand new releases. Like brand new.
Yeah.
Like 1,200 Rand AAA games are free, or quote unquote free, on Game Pass.
Don't you guys prefer, what's your guys' thoughts in terms of ownership?
So, yes.
Yeah. That's where the thing comes in. Sorry, because I'm going to take this first. About this
because I've done a complete 180. When Game Pass was announced, I thought, that's cool, but I don't like monthly subscriptions. I hate debit orders and stuff coming off my card every month. I hate that stuff. Until I actually tried Game Pass, I got a new CPU, and I also, that came with a few months of Game Pass, and then I also bundled that with, Discord Nitro had extra Game Pass months for subscribing to that. So I also did that. So I've had Game Pass for the last year or so for very little money. And I don't know what I'm going to do when that expires. I'm probably going to be paying out of pocket for it again because it's been such a good experience.
Yeah.
Have there been problems? Yes. The app is god-awful. And the downloads fail all the time. But for the amount that I'm getting, like just the entertainment, what's it, like cents per hour, the value is so good. And now that there's going to be EA games on here as well. I don't think we mentioned that. Game Pass will now feature EA Play. The value is just uncomparable. And the other day, as well, Microsoft announced that the price would be doubling. It would be going from, $5 US to $10 US.
Yeah.
In South Africa, the $5 was 59 Rand.
49. And now, 49.
Yeah. We don't know what the South African price of the $10 is going to be, but it's probably going to be like $100. And 100 Rand a month, like for a year, right?
Yeah. It's
the
it's
price of a
ridiculous.
Single new game gets me a year of access to literally hundreds of games. So I've done a complete 180. I'm now very much in support of Game Pass. I don't know about stuff like Uplay Plus and EA Play, but I'm completely on board with Game Pass. I hate paying subscription fees, but the value, they've offered so much value that it's ridiculous.
It's actually very hard. Like just from my perspective, like for me, I have Xbox Game Pass set to launch on startup. So that doesn't sound like a big deal to a lot of people, but there's only two applications that I have that run on startup usually, and that's Steam and Spotify. For me to have added Xbox to that mix is pretty like a big deal for me because it does very minimally affects your boot up speed, but it's something that I find is has become so important to me as a gamer. Like I can't actually just ignore what's there. And just to give you an example, Robin, of what you can play Flight Simulator, the brand new one, right now. Download it for free, 49 Rand a month. Yeah. I mean, that's just bizarre. That is a game that costs like 1,200 Rand.
Yeah.
Wasteland 3, World War Z. Just today, the Chapter 3 of Tell Me Why was added. Resident Evil Biohazard was added this week. There's so many games here. And like, I hear what you're saying about the ownership thing, because that was something that was on my mind as well. It's like, I don't own this game. And I played Shadow of War, Middle Earth Shadow of War, when Xbox Game Pass first released, and a few months ago it went away, and I was like, I kind of enjoyed the game. Do I want to buy it? I was like, no, not really. You know, I had my time with it. I'm not going to play it. However, that having been said, for a game like, what was it? I think it was Jurassic Park. That was on Game Pass, and I went and bought the game afterwards. I bought it on Steam, but I mean, it's such a great way to test out games and to decide what you're going to play. And then especially for things like Age of Empires, the remakes that are coming. Like, I loved those games when I was a kid, but I'm not going to go out and spend money on them again because why? I've played those games.
Yeah, so that's another thing. You can basically use Game Pass as a way to demo games for free.
Mm.
Now, I still hold the opinion that demos, every single game on sale should have a demo. I hold that opinion very strongly, and I don't want to talk about using pirating as a way to demo games. That's a whole kettle of fish. But I just want to say that Game Pass has been a great way for me to try games without any financial risk. Yeah. Because I can try a game, and then I can decide an hour in, you know, I don't want to play this anymore because I don't like it for whatever reason. And then I don't need to go through like a refund process like you have to do on Steam, or I don't just have to, you know, eat the cost of a game I didn't like. I can just uninstall it. And there's no skin off my back. Again, it's not the same for people who have to pay for data. But again, I'm in a very privileged position where I pay a decent rate for an uncapped line. All it costs me is, you know, the time to download it, which can happen in the background. I've played a lot of games which I put a decent amount of time into, but then I decided I didn't want to play it anymore. And I can do that as often as I want. There's no way I'm going to be able to play all the games on Game Pass, even for like a few minutes. There's just too many of them. But to be able to try them out to see what you like and what you don't like is invaluable to me now. And it wasn't like that a few months ago when I was still a naysayer of the service.
So, I mean, I think Sony... Okay, so the thing I kind of want to say here with all of this is that subscriptions to access multiplayer in games need to go away. Right, that and that goes for you as well, Xbox and Sony, both of you, because that's just such a silly thing to still have to be paying for in 2020, especially for Microsoft, because, hello, Microsoft, you have Azure, you own the pipe. The pipe is yours. So what are we paying for here? We're just lining your pocket. I understand that there's fees and stuff, but maybe hide those fees in your games, right? So subscription services, I think, to access multiplayer functionality and online services of games, those need to disappear. And if Sony does that, I think that will be a really great way to lure people towards that service without having to put up the massive startup cost of putting games available for quote-unquote free, even though you are paying a $9 subscription for it per month. I think you are, like, in your mind, you're kind of going, well, I mean, I'm paying $10, but I'm still getting like 100 games and not paying for them. It says free, whatever. But I think that the subscription fee for accessing online play, if Sony gets rid of that, I think that will be a game changer. And Microsoft will have to respond by getting rid of, what is it, Gold, Xbox Gold. I think that's how Sony could possibly scoop Microsoft without having to, because let's be honest, I mean, Microsoft is able to offer Game Pass for as cheap as it does because it is as big as it is. I mean, Xbox works with Microsoft. Microsoft has so many services. That's not even thinking about like the Office applications and stuff. I'm talking here about like your corporate enterprise stuff with Azure. And I think it allows them to do stuff like this. And obviously, I mean, if you have 1 billion people paying $10 a month, that adds up very quickly. I Sony has to do something. They have to do something as regards either getting rid of the online multiplayer subscription thing or increasing the value of PlayStation Plus. And I think if they do both, then I think the shoe flips on the other side and the PlayStation 5 becomes the more attractive console.
I don't think Sony can do that, though. I think Sony's just going to survive this next generation on momentum, basically, on brand loyalty. And also places like Japan. In Japan, literally the amount of people who own Xboxes can be counted on your hands. And I do mean that literally. There are about a dozen people with Xboxes in Japan, despite the fact that Microsoft has been trying very hard to break into that market.
Yeah.
People just prefer PlayStation there. I think they're going to surf out this generation of brand loyalty, but I don't know in like 5 or 6 years what's going to happen after then.
And ultimately, like we've said a few times, some people buy both consoles as it is. So, and those are the people that would probably be listening to this podcast. But yeah, Robin, do you have anything you want to say in closing?
Yeah, I think like you guys mentioned, Sony perhaps needs to start thinking about the services side of thing. Yes, they'll probably continue to have the brand loyalty when PS5 comes out, regardless of how it's priced. But yeah, the services side of things is something they need to work on. They've kind of nailed, in my opinion, they've nailed it in terms of exclusive titles. Kind of got that aspect down pat. Now we need to start looking at creating a larger or better ecosystem that's more enticing for your community.
Yeah. Clinton, closing thoughts?
I don't know why I have such strong opinions when I'm not going to buy any console, because I'll remain on PC. and again, Microsoft has allowed that because they've done Game Pass for PC too. So they're very happy for me to stay on PC and not to buy the console if I'm paying for subscription. I then might not be more console generations. I think both Sony and Microsoft might move to an entirely game/service-orientated model. That might be what the future holds. We don't know. Let's wait for the PlayStation 5 to be priced and released, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, and then we'll have another discussion about that. I just think that it's a good time to be a gamer, whether you're on PC or PlayStation or Xbox. Holiday 2020 is starting to look very exciting. If you've got money, of course. But I think we've all been saving. I've been squirreling away pennies. I'm now going to have to start squirreling away whole rands in order to afford the next generation of tech. But yeah, it's going to be a good time to be a gamer in 2020, so long as, like Robin says, you have the money. But that's going to do it from us for this week. Thank you so much for joining us for another edition of the AfriCast. My name has been Brendan Lotz, from Robin Chetty.
Yeah, cheerio.
From Clinton Matos.
Bye, everybody.
And from myself, cheerio. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.